Welcome to Reframed. Join us as we explore the concept of redemptive business in our unique context on the African continent.
Hi, my name is Doreen Zaki, and I am a corporate finance advisor at Stadia Capital. Stadia is a boutique advisory firm based out of Cape Town. We help African businesses raise capital from Africa-focused investors. Ziwani's podcast series, Risk, tackles the practical realities of taking bold steps in business, reframing the conversation around taking gospel-inspired risks while being grounded in professional responsibility. This episode takes a regional deep dive into the unique nuances of taking risks, specifically in East Africa. Our guest today is Elizabeth Ntege, an inspiring Ugandan entrepreneur, engineer, and advocate for digital transformation across Africa, as well as sustainable employment in every country on the continent. Previously, she worked as an engineer for companies like Uganda Telecom, British Telecom, BT Concert, and D-Link Europe. She served as a non-executive member on the board of Stanbic Bank Uganda, and since 2021, she has been the board chairperson of Information Communication Technology Association Uganda. Elizabeth, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Doreen. Thank you. So good day to all our listeners. I'm truly delighted to be here. I don't take this opportunity for granted.
Excellent. Elizabeth, it's so great to have you on board. Can you give us a little background of who you are, where you started, and what you're up to today?
So a little background. Mostly, I'm going to talk about our company, which is NFT Consult. When we founded the company, we had a very simple but urgent conviction. And that conviction was that Africa's greatest resource was its people. At the time, when we started the business, the human resource landscape at that time across Africa was very, very fragmented, you know. A lot of companies were struggling to find skilled talent, particularly in sectors like where I was coming from, in the telecom industry, in the IT and ICT industry. And later on, in the oil and gas sector. So while at the same time, a lot of young people coming out of colleges, coming out of universities were also finding it hard to find employment. So we saw this as an opportunity to build a bridge between the talent that we have and an opportunity to really structure the professional side of the business to make sure that these talent were adequately matched to the right job. You know, and of course, most importantly, that this job was sustainable. So we started off small in Uganda, where we are headquartered, but we had a very big vision. When you look at our vision and our mission, our job really was to unlock the human potential across the continent. So when I took over as CEO in 2020, we were only operating in six countries at the time. But today we are able to offer our services in 12 countries across East and Southern Africa. And this has not been as a result of an aggressive expansion, but because our clients have trusted us enough to actually grow with us across the continent. So most of the clients we support are international companies, and they have footprint across the continent. And as we have grown with them, they have trusted us enough to go with them into these markets on the African continent. Today, we employ about 60 permanent staff and manage around 1,500 outsourced employees. Since our inception, we have processed over, I was looking through our database, we have processed over 538,000 job orders for professionals, you know, recruitment and that kind of thing. And if you consider that in Africa, one professional typically supports over 6 individuals. This is what this is. They call it black tax, actually. So one person working, yeah, supports over 6 individuals. The ripple effect is quite enormous. You know, when you multiply 6 times 538,000 people. But when you put it into perspective, Doreen, the combined population of the countries where NFT serves, yeah, is about 350 million people live in the 12 countries where we serve, you know. And of these, about 230 million are employable. What I'm doing is just the tip of the iceberg, you know, for what is available when it comes to unlocking sustainable employment across the Africa. This is a scale of what is required, of what is available to us.
What a fantastic profile. I mean, NFT, you have done really well and you've come from far. I really admire especially African companies that are able to grow outside of their country of origin. You know, so it's very impressive that a Ugandan company has been able to gain access to other markets outside of Uganda. That's very, very impressive. And Elizabeth, can I take you back to the beginning? You started in engineering and then you transitioned into HR. Can you talk to us a bit about that? How does an engineer decide to get into HR?
So, of course, it's very unconventional. This is not a conventional path, but it's not as bad as you think it is. Yeah. You know, so I was born in the UK, but raised in Uganda. My parents made that decision to bring us up in Uganda, like most typical African families. We are based and thrive more in communities, you know. So later, I came back to the UK and studied engineering, specifically electronics engineering with a side hustle of computing. That was my many, many years ago. I don't want to date myself. But so my earlier career was really within the technical world. I spent about, I think, 20 years where I started working with companies like D-Link Europe. You mentioned that earlier, which is a computer networking firm. I then moved into a big international firm called British Telecom in the UK, where I was working as a network integrator. And what that means, every time British Telecom went into, bought another company or went into collaboration with another company, we were the technicians that were sent to join the networks. And so that's where we worked with BT Concert, BT Broadcom. And then when they would fall apart, when they would divorce, we were the technicians who came in to actually disassemble those networks, and everybody went their merry way. So that's what I started doing when I was in the UK. But then I moved to Uganda, and in Uganda, I was working as a network planning manager of Uganda Telecom's mobile network. And at that time, they were rolling out what we call their soft switch. So we had a lot of work building the network and managing the staff, you know. So those roles coming into Africa really sharpened my project management skills, my system thinking skills, and my problem-solving skills. These are tools that I later realized I could apply in any industry and in any sector. But of course, as I was working in this, I moved from being a technician to more being a leader. And that's why I became more interested in the human that's actually working on the other side. So I was curious about what it is that makes people thrive in certain careers, but not in others. So NFT is really focusing on breaking down barriers to employment. That's what we do. We're looking at what is in the process, what is stopping this person from thriving, and how do we break down that barrier, you know? So whether we are addressing things like skills gaps in our training or even signposting people to the right place where they can get the skills required for the job, whether it is building future-ready skill sets for the young people that are coming into the industry, whether it's supporting people with their mental and well-being to ensure that they are in the right job, but also that the environment is right for them to thrive. That is what we really focus on. Our HR and our human resource has never been just about recruitment. Yeah, it's really about building the pipeline of opportunity and helping us as Africans to access a sustainable work.
Oh, wow. And now that you talk about it, it does seem like a seamless transition. But what I like about what you said is that you're very clear on your vision, your mission, and your value proposition, which is very impressive. So in the world that I come from, we work with African entrepreneurs to raise capital across the continent. And when we are speaking to investors and financiers, we hear a lot of, oh, we have all of this funding, but we don't have businesses that are ready to, you know, absorb this level of funding, or we don't have quality businesses that are able to absorb this quality of funding. I wonder if that's the same thing in your world, where you have employers who are constantly talking about, oh, we don't have quality employees to hire, and yet there are these 230 million, okay, you know, 230 million employable Africans across Africa. Of course, a portion of these are already employed, but there's a significant proportion of these that are unemployed. And then we have employers, on the other hand, saying that, you know, there's a skills gap, there are no quality employees. Do you see that in your world, Elizabeth?
That has always been a complaint from employers who are trying to find the right skills to match the right, in the right roles. It's always been a complaint everywhere. So we have a lot of work that we are doing, let's say with the universities and the young people, where we are focusing on skills of the future. We're trying to predict what skills are coming up will be available, because a lot of our clients are saying, by the time the person has graduated, they don't have the experience that we need for the role. But, you know, experience takes time. So there's a level of need for us to be patient, but also a level of both us as recruiters and the potential employers to start from the grassroots, to start from when these people are younger, identify the talent and grow them into what they want them to be. Now, the biggest challenge with employees is not even the lack of talent, is actually the sustainability of the job. Most of our Gen Zs, they just don't last more than 2 years in a job. How do you guard against that? And most of the work we've been doing is, you know, how do we digitize some of these processes so that we are not really focusing or relying on one person just in case they leave? So you have to build that in your system, that these guys are only going to last 2 to 3 years with you, and you and utilize their talent and grow it as much as possible. So loyalty in the job market is not there, and yet people are asking for sustainability and well-paid jobs. So it's not an easy fix, to be honest with you.
Yes. I have a young son, and he watches a lot of gaming on YouTube. And, you know, I was telling him, you know, why are you wasting time watching all these gamings on YouTube? And he's like, Mom, no offense, they actually make more money than you, which is true.
And the truth of the matter is, our young people like the money bit. I'm struggling to tell them that the money will come, you know. Just focus a little bit on what you can offer, on who you serve, and on solving problems, and the money will come. But most of them are doing that. Like, I want the money now. It really affects their choices, because they are not patient enough to stick with what is offered. They're always moving. Now, even within the African context, we may not have enough jobs, but we are seeing employment of our young people abroad, you know, remotely. You don't have to leave this continent to be able to serve outside. So a lot of young people are looking at that. They can work from home. They can work at whatever odd hours that are available to them. But most importantly, they are able to make the money that they are looking for. And therefore, they become a rare talent. And then there's a level of frustration amongst traditional, old-fashioned companies that are not evolving at the rate at which our skills are evolving, at the rate at which our passions are evolving. And most people, most African and traditional hierarchy things, they do what I'm telling you to do and get on with it. They're like, I have a choice. So anyway, that's really in a nutshell, that they have a right to sustainable employment. They have a right to an environment that helps them thrive. And by understanding that, you get the most out of them.
That's really good advice. You're obviously well experienced in this space. And let's just talk about, you know, how NFT has grown over the years. Like I said, it's very impressive when an African business is able to grow, not just locally. First of all, let's start for an African business to be able to start, survive the economic hardship that it is doing business in some parts of Africa. And not even just surviving it, but growing and then moving into new countries. Can you talk a bit about your journey growing from a startup to how many countries are you in?
Yeah, we're now in 12. As I mentioned, we started in Uganda as a small entity, really focusing on specific sectors which were where we were more comfortable. The ICT sector, the telecom sector, and eventually when we were looking at outsourcing, the oil and gas sector was where we started. Our expansion has really been client-driven, you know. Many of our clients that we support operate regionally. So when they have moved into new markets, they've wanted us to go with them into those new markets. Or if they were already operating in the new markets, when they brought us on board, then they would ask us to go and also serve them into those new markets. So that is how we found ourselves in Rwanda. A client that I met wanted us to support them in the recruitment of customer service agents within their new call center. And then from there, that was our move into Burundi. The same client was doing the same thing in Burundi and later into Tanzania. In another way, we had a very big investor that was invested into our business so that we could expand into Southern Africa, you know. As a business, this is both flattering and terrifying at the same time, because we are not expanding on our own, you know, in our own timeline, but on the strength of our reputation. That is it. You know, it's scary that you're moving into it, but due to your reputation. And the expansion comes with risk. So some of those significant risks that we have faced as we have expanded, you know, you're coming from an industry where you're a bit comfortable, then you go into new markets. There's a lot of risk involved, you know. So, for example, in certain countries like Burundi and Rwanda, there's been a whole lot of shortage of local skill sets that are required, especially in the sectors that we serve. So in some of those sectors, in some of those countries, the talent pool is very thin, you know, in the technical role. So we've had to bring in sometimes people from Kenya, people from Uganda to support the client, but it's not a cost-effective way of managing. Sometimes we even bring in resources from abroad, like contractors, and require them to build the capacity locally, you know. So there are also some political hurdles sometimes you have to work with. Work permits are not easily found for our workers, especially when we bring them from abroad. There's always changes in labor laws that we need to navigate. And then there are also some political sensitivities that sometimes derail the way we operate. So you have to be very cognizant and really intentional in how you navigate around that. Then, of course, there's the issue of knowledge loss. You know, that is a risk. When our key people suddenly leave, your operations can grind to a what? To a halt, you know, in these kind of things. So especially, let's say you're a startup. If you have 5 employees and one of them, you know, has got all the training and has been working, you're reliant on them, they suddenly leave, that's 20% of your talent pool that has gone. And it can actually bring your your business to a standstill. So for NFT, we have done a lot of automation. 70% of our recruitment processes are automated. And every workflow is documented. We are ISO certified in quality management systems. And this has ensured that we are consistent across every market we go in. I remember quite recently, our team in Burundi, suddenly two-thirds of our team resigned. They were going to create their own recruitment agency. That's always the issue with some of our workers. They want to take our clients, but also create their own recruitment agency. But at the same time, my business manager who's working in that area, he's on long-time sick leave. Unfortunately, he's not been well for a long time. So we found ourselves in a position where we had our systems were down. We had lost a very big chunk of our employees. But we were able, because we had automated most of this system, one, to put in someone to go and hold the ship while we were stabilizing it, but also to get the business back and processes in order within 30 days. And finally, definitely culture intelligence. You have to hire local, you know. But train them centrally, especially when it comes to your values. This way, every office has culture implanted in them that is coming from the HQ. And so really definitely get really clear on what is good for them and how you can impart the values and culture in that area. So those are some of the strategies I would say that are really good when it comes to mitigating expansion and operational risk in areas where you cannot be in every country at the same time.
That's really good advice for businesses in Africa that are looking to grow into other African countries. But in addition to that, it's really good advice for international companies that are looking to come into Africa. One of the things that I've noticed a lot working with international companies is sometimes they view Africa, they have this monolithic view of Africa where they think the culture is the same. You know, there was a time when I went to the States when I was much younger and someone asked me whether I speak African. And I think that's when I realized how, some international markets are very ignorant of Africa. And so it's very important to understand that Africa is made up of 54 countries, but even more so, we have 3,000, I think over 3,000 languages. And even within those languages, there are different cultural nuances, even within the individual, the different tribes, the different languages. And so it's very important for you to understand culture and political sensitivities. I think for me, my other question would be, in terms of growing into other new territories, have you encountered any corruption and how have you dealt with that? Because that is still a very big issue across sub-Saharan Africa and other emerging economies. What has your experience been?
Yes, one of the biggest, I would say, opportunities on risk or biggest challenges we've had is corruption in the job market. Traditionally, for you to get a job, you needed to know someone. You know, and that in itself is corruption. So I'll tell you a story that happened to us when we was in Uganda. So initially, we were renting a place where before we automated some of our systems, where whenever we had recruitment, people would have to come to our offices and hand in their CVs for a specific application. You know how it is, right? Your CV, tailor it to the job and put it in and come and hand it in an envelope at the reception. People would put in their CVs and include some cash in there. So corruption starts at that level everywhere. So and I always noticed that within the job market, that is really prevalent, you know. Because people don't have anybody to speak for them. And so some of the services, as we have been offering them across the continent, there's always, they have normalized corruption and they are calling it, in Kenya, I believe they call it kintu kidogo. You know, it is so small. It is something that is common. You have to be on guard with what with that happening, and as a new business, it can actually break you. But look at the different ways that people can actually trap you. We had cases where you'd offer a service, and before you get paid, the procurement manager is telling you, okay, can you give me 40% of this, you know, of this invoice before I release your payment? You know, so we've had a lot of that happening all over. One major one, we actually had to close our operation in one country as a result of standing against corruption, you know. And I'll tell you what happened. We had a situation where we were operating in this country that is highly corrupt, you know, and every Thursday, I believe it was every Thursday, we would get members of the government or the revenue authorities coming to our offices and arresting or harassing our local staff, our workers. And then they would get them threatened to put them into the police station. And being Thursday, you only had Friday to get them out. Otherwise, they would spend the whole weekend in the prison. So we were forced to kind of try to mitigate those kind of solutions, because they would use issues like, you haven't paid enough taxes, or you did such, you had certain legal issues that you haven't ticked off. So what happened in this case, we actually tried to mitigate the situation by hiring correct. We had very good, lawyers on board. We have very good accountants from some of the, you know, big five working for us. And we thought that we would address that issue, but it didn't work. We had tried everything possible. So we made the decision to close this business because we were not going to keep paying for our staff and put our people in danger. And it went against our values and it was not sustainable anyway. So we lost a business that was in revenue about $2 million. The decision was difficult to close the business. But, you know, God is faithful. What we saw is that our staff who were working for us, our core staff were about 12, and our contract staff, which were over 600, they didn't lose their livelihood, you know. Some of them were absorbed by their competitors, our competitors. Others, two sets started their own businesses, one in the recruitment field, one went and started a restaurant, you know. And we looked at this in a more proactive way, you know. The loss actually became more redemptive as a result of that. Yeah. But that experience shaped my view on risk forever. We had to acknowledge that sometimes there are some things we can't control, you know. We can't control the outcomes, but we can definitely control how we respond in uncertainty situation. We have always had to look at what options exist for us. So if you are faced in a situation where you have to analyze your risk, you have to be cognizant of the risk around you. I think in the banking industry, they call it risk appetite. You have to be very clear on what your risk appetite in certain situation. At that point, you have to decide, how do I transfer the risk? And you can do that through insurance, through partnerships. Do I accept the risk and it's within my risk appetite and manage it through my systems and processes? That is important, you know. How do I mitigate it? If I have to mitigate, if I can't transfer it, I can't accept it. How do I mitigate it? And you can do this by diversifying the services you offer. And in our case, in this situation, we actually eliminated the risk by walking away from a $2 million business, you know? So really the key is having the wisdom to know which strategy serves you in that situation and being very clear on your long-term mission, not just on your short-term profits. It's very important that you're very, very clear on what your long-term mission is, and it's not just on your short-term profits. So that in a nutshell is what I would say around, you know, using risk in that sense.
And that's very challenging for many businesses, especially trying to manage the tax man across a lot of African, you know, countries, trying to manage the tax man. And then integrity does come into play, because a lot of the time the tax man will say, we can strike off your $2 million tax and you only need to pay $20,000. So integrity is always at play. Even when it comes to getting new contracts, have you had an experience where you have tendered for a job as a HR provider and maybe you have been accepted on that job, but it's contingent on you paying a certain amount of money? Have you had that experience? And how have you, what measures did you take in ensuring that you retain integrity in those types of situations?
Okay, so one of the ways that I always, if I was to face that kind of situation, would be to understand where you can play and where you can't play, you know? Of course, as a new business, whatever is coming in, you're applying, you're always going in, you're applying yourself, you're putting in all sorts of tenders, you're hoping to get the business, and, you know, everything really depends on you getting this business, you know. I have never had an opportunity where somebody has said, you put in a tender, pay me this amount of money to get it, because from day one, we were very clear about what we do and what we don't accept. To be honest, I can't judge anybody, especially when you're starting. I always encourage people to start small because the risks are always there. Don't get yourself in a situation where you're highly dependent on this business going through. So for anybody who's starting up, please be cognizant of these things happening. Don't be naive about them, but don't put all your eggs in one basket, you know. Try and spread your wing, diversify your decisions, your services, to ensure that you don't get involved in these kind of things, because they don't pay. You know, they'll come and bite you in the long run. And that is what we have seen, that many years down the line, it comes back, because now you it's like an addiction. That's the only way you work. You don't learn. And then you're also a very poor example to your employees, because they know for this thing to happen, this is what happens. And really, you're not doing them any justice by having those kind of practices. There's a lot of business. The pie is quite big. I told you we have 230 million people that are employable. You know, why waste your time on this little section when you could be serving other people in other industry? So try to avoid those, understand and avoid those situations as we build the business.
Absolutely. And for me, it staggers me how in Kenya, 80% of the population is Christian or claims to be Christian. I'm not sure what those numbers are in Uganda, but I'm pretty sure they're similar to Kenya. 85, yes, you're even higher, 85%, 80 to 90% of East Africans claim to be Christian, and yet the corruption is very rampant in our countries. And so I want to look at how faith has helped you in your business and how it has sustained, you know, NFT. And I like what you said, you can be a startup and you might have an opportunity where you've tendered for something, and you pay some money to get the job. And in the short term, you might win. But in the long run, does it mean that you'll always have to, you know, fork out a certain amount of money every time you want a new job? And what does that do to your brand, your faith walk with God? What does that mean in the long run? As opposed to maybe saying, look, you know what? I'm going to step away from this deal. I'm going to walk away from this deal. I know that I'm very desperate. And, you know, it's easy to say it when you're an established company and you have money coming in every month. But when you're a startup and you have bills to pay and you have employees, you know, that are dependent on you, it's very hard to make these, you know, it's very hard to walk away, especially from a very large client. I think your level of faith, I mean, you have to have a lot of faith for you to be able to walk away from that. But it's important for you to be known in the market as, I am a person of integrity. We are a company of integrity. This is how we work. I do believe there's space for those types of businesses to do well in this market. I do believe there are people who are looking for businesses that have integrity, that they're willing to work with in the long run. And I think maybe that's the reason why NFT has been successful over the last 20 years. I think it is because of the integrity, backed by faith.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Doreen. Yeah, we are a very faithful company, as we say. One of the things that I've told my employees is that at NFT, we sell hope. Hope in one way or the other. Our values are anchored in three areas: professionalism, integrity, and service. So we clearly serve the person. You know, this is what Christ taught us: serve the person and the money will come. So these values don't only live on a poster on somewhere. You know, we have them everywhere in our businesses where people can see them. Not only have we defined our values, but we even put we list the type of habits that we expect as a result of these values, you know, so that people are not like, well, I didn't understand what it means by integrity. No, integrity means you don't do this, you don't do this, you do this, you don't, you know. So very clearly, we put it all over our offices so that people understand it. We have also included it in our personal development. When it comes to our values and their contribution to people's personal development scorecards, they take up quite a bit. They take up 20% of the value of your scorecard when it comes, and they are non-negotiable. You can score high in everything else, in all your KPIs, but if you fail on the values that we have in place, then it's something that you can get you fired or your contract will not be renewed. It is priceless. Your reputation is priceless. It opens doors to long-term opportunities, and it cannot be bought by money. Definitely not. So ultimately, it's the foundation on which, if our vision is to provide sustainable opportunities in employment, it is the foundation on which sustainable cross-border businesses can be built, you know, as long as you're very focused on long-term value as opposed to short-term gain right now. Yeah.
So three things: professionalism, integrity, services. That's what I hear from you. And I like that because that is the foundation of that is based on biblical truth. You know, when you talk about professionalism, you talk about skill. In fact, there's a verse in the Bible that talks about how your skill can bring you before kings. Integrity, it talks about honest skills. Don't use dishonest skills. You know, services, it talks about serving. So, you know, it's interesting how the three tenets of your business are very heavily, you know, very heavily laid upon a foundation of truth. And that's very admirable. But I think it's very important for startups to meet business owners such as yourselves who are able to say, look, I've never compromised and I'm in 12 countries. You know, and I have 60 employees and I have 1,500 people that are outsourced through NFT. I think it's very important that very many Christians are able to hear your story and to be able to learn and understand that, look, God is faithful. And here are examples of his faithfulness.
So I have two verses that I really I focus on in the Bible. One of them, I actually have it as my signature on my Outlook. If I send you email, you'll see it. The first of this is from Proverbs 3:27, which says, do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to act. You know, I've had this verse on me since COVID. Do not withhold good when it is in your power to act. So I leverage my position to be able to serve people. The second one comes out of 1 Corinthians 13:13, which states that now these three remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. At NFT, we sell hope. We are faithful, and we love on our what we call our five C's. And our five C's are our core staff, our clients, who we serve, the candidates that come to us looking for jobs, the contractors that we outsource to other people, But recently we also added our community. So those verses have been things that have rooted me within how I do my business and how I work, and actually in mitigating the risk that comes in doing this business.
That's very insightful, Elizabeth. Thanks for that. Even as we draw to a close, is there any advice that you'd give startups or businesses? I know we've not had very many HR professionals who've joined us on this podcast, so we're glad to have you on board. What advice or what words would you give a startup or a HR professional or any business or any individual on your experience, what you could have done better, what you could have done differently?
Thank you, Doreen. Thank you so much for that. And I'm sad that we have come to the end of our session. By the way, I'm not an HR professional. I've never actually done the HR exams. I am still an engineer by qualifications. I didn't have time to go back and do. I just know a lot and I use my opinion quite liberally. Yeah. So my comments for startups, actually, especially when you're just starting up early in your career or in your business, yeah, sometimes risk feels terrifying because you can see, you're clearly seeing what you may lose. And those are the examples that you gave earlier and I gave earlier. You're clearly seeing what you may lose. So risk can feel terrifying. But with time and experience, as you mentioned earlier, we're 20 years down the road, you begin to realize that risk is also about what you stand to gain. Mitigating it, accepting it, transferring it, what do you stand to gain? You know, in fact, the biggest risk is often not taking any risk at all. So staying in your comfort zone is not actually a good thing, because while you're there, opportunities may pass you by, you know. So risk is not a bad thing. You can start with a lot of experience. You should be able to view it as that. So my advice to anybody starting down this journey as a startup, as anybody in this industry, start small. Just taking some small calculated risks, you know, earlier on in your business. This will help you rebuild risk tolerance, and you learn how to evaluate potential opportunities. Don't wait to feel ready while waiting for the right risk or whatever. Just don't wait to feel ready. You'll never feel ready for meaningful risk. So start small, take calculated risks that don't destroy your business. Eh? That don't make you fail. Build resilience. You know, you develop systems and relationships that can weather the storm. You know, get out there. Don't die in your own movie, as we say in on the African continent. Keep learning constantly. You know, as I was moving into different areas, different regions, I got a book and learned about it. I just didn't, you know, go and think that what I did in Uganda is going to work in another country. You know, every risk has its issues around it. Yeah, so it teaches you something. Sometimes you learn, sometimes you learn to avoid. Sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it isn't, you know. And most importantly, trust the process. Focus on faithfulness. Focus on faithfully stewarding, not controlling the outcomes. Finally, remember, courage isn't the absence of fear. You know, there's a saying, courage isn't the absence of fear. Courage is doing the right thing despite the fear. So trust God, because when you step out with integrity, aligning your professional choices with your values, you'll find that God will multiply your courage and protects the purpose that you have and the purpose that He has for you. So risk is not something that we should fear. It is something that we should learn to steward wisely. And with those few remarks, I want to thank you. And God bless anybody who comes into this business. Thank you so much, guys.
Those are such wonderful nuggets of wisdom. We're so glad to have had you on this podcast, Elizabeth. Thank you for joining us today. And to our listeners, I trust you've been able to gain such powerful insights into your business, into your profession, even personally, and even in your spiritual walk. We look forward to you joining again next time.
Thank you for joining us. This episode of Reframed was brought to you by Ziwani, a community of business leaders who partner together to live out their kingdom calling in the marketplace within Africa. To know more about us, visit our website at ziwani.com. That's ZIWANI.com.